From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, August 5th, 2025. The Maine Department of Corrections has restricted operations at the Piscataquis County Jail, citing concerns about the health and safety of staff, inmates, and visitors. In a release issued today, state officials say the action stems from a July inspection in which the jail failed to meet one essential and 11 mandatory standards, and says the department was unable to review more because of a lack of documentation. According to the statement, the failures include, quote, discrepancies in medical records, improper medication and sharps management, and not following infectious disease protocols. The Department of Corrections says it's requiring Piscataquis County Jail to halt new intakes, return all inmates to their original facilities, and create an action plan to address the health and safety concerns. Border Patrol agents in Maine say they have arrested a Colombian national they allege was part of an international criminal group. An agency spokesperson says the arrest took place in the town of Union on July 30th, following a traffic stop initiated by the Maine State Police, adding that agents determined the person had a burglary warrant from New Jersey and was a member of a, quote, South American theft group. The spokesperson declined to share the person's identity, citing privacy laws, and could not immediately provide more information about the theft group's activities or how active it is in the U.S. The detainee has since been transferred to ICE for removal proceedings, according to Border Patrol. Maine State Auditor Matt Dunlap says he'll decide after Labor Day if he'll challenge 2nd District Congressman Jared Golden in next year's Democratic primary. As Steve Missler reports, Dunlap also says one national Democratic group has tried to discourage him from running.
Dunlap, who was Maine's Secretary of State for 7 terms, first floated his possible candidacy in May, but he's kept a low public profile ever since. Dunlap says he's received some encouraging feedback, but the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has already publicly reaffirmed its support for Golden. The group spent nearly $4 million helping him win re-election last year in the Trump-friendly 2nd District, according to FEC data. Still, that hasn't dissuaded Dunlap from exploring a bid.
Again, you got to weigh it all out very carefully, but so far I haven't seen anything that points to me stepping on a banana peel.
Golden has said previously that Dunlap has a small chance of beating him next year and, quote, zero chance of beating Republican Paul LePage, the former governor who would take on the winner of a Democratic primary. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Republican businessman Ben Midgley of Kennebunkport announced his run for governor this morning, vowing to restore opportunities for working Mainers, lower electricity costs, and restore parental rights in education, if elected. Carol Bousquet reports.
Ben Midgley calls himself an outsider in the world of politics, a family man and business leader who led Planet Fitness for 30 years before founding Crunch Franchising, named the top fitness franchise by Entrepreneur Magazine last year. Midgley says he can create jobs, attract investment, and make owning a home possible for more Mainers.
I have definitely experienced the American dream, and I'm grateful for that. But my biggest concern is that opportunity is slipping away from far too many Mainers now. Mainers are some of the hardest working people on earth, literally. And they don't expect things to just be given to them, but they do want that opportunity, and I'm here to do just that.
Midgley also pledged to protect the Second Amendment's right to bear arms and to ban transgendered athletes from women's sports. Midgley joins a field of 8 other Republicans, 6 Democrats, and 1 independent, all vying to become Maine's next governor. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
State foresters today recorded the first deaths of beech trees from a disease that just arrived in the state 4 years ago and is now present in all 16 counties. As Patty White reports, scientists say beech leaf disease could decimate a species that's common in Maine woods and an important food source for wildlife.
An invasive microscopic roundworm called a nematode causes beech leaf disease, which was first detected in Ohio and has since rapidly spread north and east. Aaron Bergdahl, a forest pathologist with the Maine Forest Service, says while checking a monitoring plot in the Midcoast Tuesday morning, scientists made an unfortunate discovery, the first tree deaths from the disease.
A tough dose of reality of what this disease is actually doing in the state, and kind of a foreshadowing of what we can expect to see throughout large acreages in Maine. And I think that's going to be very impactful when people realize that one forest that they used to walk through is no longer similar to what it was, and it's dying or dead.
Nutrient-dense beech nuts are also an important food source for wildlife, including black bears and the rare early hairstreak butterfly. Bergdahl says there are currently no practical forest-level treatments for beech leaf disease, but there are for homeowners. He urges people to be vigilant, to look for symptoms such as dark banding on leaves. And to limit spread, Bergdahl says only burn firewood where you buy it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
An estimated 50,000 birds die from colliding with glass windows each year in Maine's biggest city, according to the Maine Audubon. Today, the state released new voluntary guidelines on how to design publicly funded buildings that are more bird-friendly. Nora Sachs has more.
The 10 guidelines were developed by local architects, builders, and experts who have studied this issue, like Maine Audubon's Nick Lund. He says many of the bird-safe design principles and strategies, such as minimizing the use of reflective glass, are pretty intuitive. Others, such as focusing prevention efforts on the lower floors, are not.
The vast majority of collisions occur down low to the ground, not high up in the sky where birds are, you know, would be migrating.
Another really important one, says Lund, is you can't just draw the blinds.
Solutions need to appear on the outside surface of the glass.
These new guidelines are the product of a law passed in 2023, making Maine one of just four states to enact legislation to protect birds from window collisions. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nora Sachs.
Despite long-term growth, Maine's organic farming sector is facing serious economic headwinds, according to a new report from the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. The report finds that from 2007 to 2022, organic product sales more than doubled in the state to a total value of nearly $50 million. But MOFCA Executive Director Sarah Alexander says those numbers mask a recent dip in sales for some products.
The dairy sector in particular, as we know, has seen some significant decreases. But we also do see that in vegetables and then other crops, which include hay and maple.
At the same time, Alexander says sales of organic flours, grains, and poultry have grown. The report highlights the high cost of running a farm and the aging of Maine's farming workforce as long-term challenges. Bar Harbor is billed as the gateway to Acadia National Park, and its summer season draws tourists from around the country and the world. But the region is facing new pressures this year, including cuts within the National Park Service, a drop in cruise ship visits, and a decline in visitors from Canada. Caitlin Badayan visited the historic community on Mount Desert Island to see how peak season is going so far.
Having visited Acadia National Park over the last 45 years, Kyle Veets of Newton, Massachusetts, and his family are well acquainted with the area.
Well, my sister and her two kids are here to check out the Wild Gardens and Jessup Path. They're not like adventurous hikers. So, you know, something that's pretty user-friendly is what we wanted to do today.
Veet says while this summer's stay at the park's Seawall campground is going well, he's noticed small changes that he attributes to the Trump administration's cuts to the National Park Service. Normally, there'd be two or three rangers at the campground when he checks in. But this year, he says there was only one.
No one else would notice that if it was their first time there, but I said, yeah, that has to be due to the cuts.
And Veet says although services appear to be intact, he's concerned about what it's like for staffers at the park.
The people that are there must be working twice as hard. That'd be my guess. They're doing a good job.
Others close to the park are more direct in assessing the current staffing situation.
We need to have the hiring freeze lifted. We need for seasonal hiring to occur as usual because too much is at stake.
Eric Stiles, is with the nonprofit Friends of Acadia. He says while it's not clear about the staffing reductions here, he cites estimates that say since January, the National Park Service as a whole has lost about a quarter of its permanent workforce, and seasonal staffing for the summer is down by about 40% as well.
So when you take a look at the carriage roads, for example, if there was a big hurricane that hit down East Maine, we're not going to have the staff that's needed to really just get in there and restore it.
Across the U.S., advocates for the national parks say understaffing will slow responses to medical calls, reduce hours at visitor centers, and delay maintenance. But park officials aren't saying much about the cuts or their effects on services.
It's been a very busy summer at Acadia National Park, which is to be expected.
When asked about the staffing situation at the park, Acadia spokesperson Amanda Pollack says the focus has been on ensuring visitors have a great experience.
It's great to have visitors out and about and watching them make connections with such an important landscape and an important park.
But that connection to the park is just as important for Bar Harbor businesses, who are watching with concern.
We tend to say what happens in Bar Harbor affects the National Park, and what happens in the National Park affects Bar Harbor.
Everill Eaton is executive director for the Bar Harbor Chamber of Commerce, whose members are confronting a number of uncertainties this summer. Historically, Canadian tourists have made up 4% of visitors to the area, but they're staying away this summer in the wake of tariffs and comments made by President Trump about annexing their country. And Eaton says cruise ship activity is also down as town limits on cruise ship visitors take effect.
Where I'm most concerned and looking towards is cruise ships historically have helped us booster our shoulder seasons after Labor Day. So I think kind of going into the fall, that's an area that we have a little bit concern on.
But with so many changes evolving, Eaton says it's still hard to say how this will affect the season as a whole or how businesses will have to adapt next year. Acadia visitor Kyle Vietz, meanwhile, is hoping that the staffing issue doesn't take too big a toll.
Is it sustainable? I don't know. Yeah. But you asked if I was concerned. Super concerned. Yeah. It's a, it's one of the things that I look forward to really enjoy life.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll look back at some of the best segments from Maine Calling. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.